the mess. I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Hello, this is Larry Rhodes with the Free Thought Radio Hour. I've got Wombat.
The Wombat!
And the bearded...
Bearded Boy Scout.
I like this guy.
This is an atheism show. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, rational thought, and science. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, and holy books and superstition. And as a station identification, like say this is WOZO Radio FM 103.9 FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. We are coming across with low power. So if you can't hear us, if you're in downtown Knoxville or not in downtown Knoxville, you can always listen to us over the internet at WOZORadio.com. Despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program. We'll also be talking about atheists and rationalist groups that reside here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. And did you know that there's an atheist television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville?
I'm pretty sure there isn't.
There is.
No way.
And it's been broadcasting for 6 years.
What?
That's right.
Actually, it should be seven. We are midway through the summer. We've had to have reached that anniversary by now.
It's really started in August. So,
isn't it August right now?
Yeah. Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. All right. And we'll this is the last time you get away with that.
And we'll talk about that too. We'll tell you how you can get involved with it, or just listen to it and call in. I'm getting kind of an echo on here.
You just got to get next to the mic.
Yeah, it may be that it's...
Get up on that.
All these mics being turned on.
I also want to make a point. Bearded Boy Scout has the best beard in this room right now. Daughter 5 is like in second place. I'm just trying to... I'm waiting to go home to my shaver so I can just get rid of this shame.
Just because mine's gray.
I'm getting there.
I'm tempted to dye mine gray just to honor Daughter 5.
Oh, wow. That's powerful.
I don't like to call it gray. I think I'm going blonde is what it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's just called old sheep.
That's it. And today, we will be talking about a world without religion and the origins of morality.
Heavy.
The origins of morality. How'd that get in there? All right. Yeah, I love
it's
that.
All
I can,
about morality.
I can go in that all day long.
Right. And if you feel this is a good topic and you have things to say on the subject, please call in and join the conversation.
What's that number?
865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And we'll be happy to hear from you. Wombat, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so I wasn't here last week. Mm-hmm. I was visiting Mama Wombat.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful time. Very rare that I get a vacation. But while I'm there, I'm listening to the new show, Bearded Boy Scout Doubter 5. I'm having a fun time. I'm excited to listen to this. And I'm starting the show off, and it's like... And this is a bad thing that happened. Yeah, that's a bad thing. Here's another bad thing that happened. Oh, that's bad. That's bad.
Heavy stuff.
It was heavy. Yeah. It was heavy. I was going out. You guys are getting me down.
Did you cry?
I felt a warmth inside my heart that I hadn't felt in a long
Mission
time.
Accomplished.
Get mm-hmm. taken out go. Of my body and curb stomped on the side of the road.
Success. All right. I can sleep well tonight.
So what I was waiting for was like that big uplifting, let's get happy at the last like 5 minutes. Look at that positive feeling.
There
was just nothing there.
There was just nothing there.
So now that I'm back, I want to get there. I want to talk about a world without religion, the bad and the good. Think we can do that?
Sure. So we're talking like imagine all the people.
So let's
John Lennon here.
Okay. First of all, we all need to get up and go to this alternative dimension that we've established with the world without religion. All right. Dad, five, make sure you get up. Bearded Scout, close the door. Thanks. I appreciate that. Okay. Okay, we're starting this machine. It's a pretty simple machine. Thanks, I appreciate that. Okay, I don't know how to... All right, we're good. We're in. We're in. It's a brand new dimension that we're in. We step out. Doubter 5, tell me what you see. This is a world without religion.
I see a futuristic world like...
Oh, yeah, like Star
okay.
Trek.
Okay.
Matter of fact, there's a cartoon floating around on the internet that says... A kid is at the table with his parents, and he says, "Mom, Dad, why isn't there any religion on Star Trek?" And the dad says, "Because it's the future, son."
The future, 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 future.
Okay, right. So you see a futuristic utopia. Why do people automatically get along to the point where they
don't look at don't have this one thing for sure, which is an incredibly divisive. Meme, you know, the different religions of the world divide people into different factions, and generally every religion says the other people are not worthy of their paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And some people even take it further, say, well, they're not entirely human if they don't worship our God. You know, they're just kindling their firewood, basically, because they're going to be condemned to hell.
So I have had conversations where I've not brought up religion at all, but I've almost got into a verbal debate, and that's the polite way of putting it, where people will say, oh, you like Marvel? I'm a DC guy. And it will go to verbal blows back and forth. We're not talking about religion at all. We just like things a lot. And I think when people just like things a lot, you'll have divisions like that. You'll have football players who are like, Tim Brady's era was the best one of the Patriots' time. No. Belichick, just go for it.
It's a personal bias.
Okay.
You know, anytime I think that you hold something sacred. Okay, so I think that's really the core
like
of
the Green Bay
conversation.
Packers.
Yes.
Or
when you hold
Dream
something
Team,
sacred,
1996.
Yeah, well, when you hold something sacred, what you do is you essentially remove it from criticism from other people. Even though they're going to criticize it, in your mind, it shouldn't be criticized. It should be worthy of non-critical approach.
Right.
So I think that's part and parcel why you get that type of argumentative influence in those verbal debates that you're talking about, is because we hold our personal views sacred.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're locking
it's a
them
part
away.
Of me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like part of my childhood and stuff like that. I'll
well,
get into
one thing further, the holy books. I mean, you're talking sports, you don't have holy books. You have a us versus them mentality,
yeah.
And you do hold certain things sacred. But in the holy books themselves, for instance, in the Bible it says, if someone should lead you to try to worship another god, you should kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You let your hand be the first. Then you have Islam, where you can't hardly open the Quran without some edict of killing the infidel. I mean, it's throughout the book.
So I have read the Quran twice, but it's a minor exaggeration. But yeah, there are phrases in there that do say, yeah.
Okay. But anyway, this is the text of the religion telling you to kill non-believers. I mean, you don't have that in sports. You don't have that in even national politics, generally. Because it's national politics are more like sports, you know.
Sure.
We're good. We're better than them. Mm. But at the same time, it's nationalism.
So there's no explicit instructions to kill the other team.
Well, not only that, but these instructions come from the creator of the universe, which you disobey at your peril.
You don't get that.
You don't get that.
What about the Roman emperors and the gladiators?
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And the Egyptians, the pharaohs were considered gods.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
But those types of religions are not really represented at this point. You know, the multiple deities, the polytheist gods. You don't have that type of thing now. But you do have some religions that are philosophical religions, like Buddhism, Taoism, Shintoism, ancestor worship. But those are not... basically, those aren't us versus them religions.
Well, think about, too, what does extremist Buddhism look like? I mean,
I've seen it. So have you ever been to a CrossFit?
Yes.
It's just like that.
Okay.
Except with more togas, maybe.
Sure. So essentially nonviolent.
It's barefoot CrossFit.
Sure.
Yeah.
I follow you. So, but I mean, I think that's kind of representative, too, of your philosophy. I think when you can look at what the fundamentals of an ideology represent and what they look like when you strip out all the interpretation and you just look at what the text or what the prophets or what the gods actually say.
The explicit instructions
right.
there.
That's when you find, well, you know, you're fundamentalists.
Sure.
You go a little bit beyond that to those who follow the word of the letter to the dot. then you end up with the extremists.
So are you saying the further we get away from that strict dogmatic interpretation, the more likely you are to get more technologically advanced, the better society?
I would think so.
My theory is kind of like, I believe it's, I don't want to say it's homeopathy in Britain right now, where you essentially you take a small amount of a toxic substance and you place it in a large amount of water and it dilutes that substance.
Sure.
They didn't prescribe that as medication against whatever that toxin was. Now, the reality is that we know that the more you dilute something, the less potent it is. So my theory is that perhaps a world in the future became a world without religion from this dilution of these theologies.
Oh, I know your delusion theory.
This is my delusion theory.
It's the delusion theory. All right. So for the listeners, we've debated this at length before. It was a very... For a particular 7-year-old involved who had to listen to this back and forth go on for like maybe about an hour and a half at a Red Robins. Great kid, by the way.
Thank you.
If you haven't already, why don't you just go right through that dilution theory real quick? It's actually really interesting.
Essentially what my theory is that like homeopathy, and I believe I'm saying that term appropriately, when you dilute something, it becomes weaker. So you drop if you were to drop a drop of arsenic into a vat of 1,000 gallons of water, you're not amplifying that effect. You're decreasing its effectiveness
per milliliter of the water. Yeah.
Sure. My theory is that religion works essentially the same way. I think the further we get away from point of origin and fundamental beliefs. So in Christianity, we see the multiple denominations that have cropped out and continue to crop out and continue to become more and more liberal and less fundamental. Mm. I think over time, that may play into the overall dilution of the existence of religion as we move along time. I think, you know, if you look at what Judaism has become now compared to what it was in the Bible, it's very diluted from what it was.
One of the things about religion...
But it's also more powerful than it's ever been before.
Yeah. Sure.
That we're not really addressing is the authoritarian aspect of it. I mean, you have God and the book telling you what to do, and the authoritarian... ism of religion tells you cannot stray from that.
Right.
It's not like, this is probably a good idea. It's like, you have to. These are commandments.
Sure.
And there are 613 in the Bible.
For specifically Christianity. There's even more if you go into Islam.
Right. But it's not, for Christian listeners out there who have not read the Bible, there's not just 10 commandments, there's 613.
And there were actually two sets of those.
Right.
Yeah.
The 10 commandments, there was a first set that was different from the second set that you know about.
If you follow the Church of Latter-day Saints, you have an even more additional sect than the third part of that book. So a lot of commandments, and they're very important.
Yeah.
So, I guess you need a lot of rules to, like, manage a lot of people.
Well, sure, yeah.
Well most of the listeners, I guess, if they're not familiar with atheism or have deconstructed morals, they would say the first thing that we need religion for, we've got to have religion, is for morals. Mm. What do you say about that?
Where do morals come from?
Right.
I think if you take the spiritual aspect out of morality, you still find that we as human beings, as an evolutionary process, do whatever we can for self-preservation. And I think self-preservation includes not killing each other, not just protecting ourselves from being killed, but also instituting opportunities for us to understand that if we kill each other, our opportunity for survival decreases. If I have you on my side in our process of living, especially if we're talking 5,000 years ago, we're a subspecies on the subcontinent, on the sub-Saharan desert, and we're trying to survive together, if I kill you, my chances of survival just decreased exponentially. So I think that is one of the first reasons that we decided that murder was a bad idea. I think morality stems in some level from our evolutionary need for survival, and that could be a bit of a stretch in some cases.
Evolutionary need for survival.
Well, and that may not be.
I consider it a social contract. We have made social contracts with each other to not kill each other, not lie, not steal, that type of thing. But a religious person will come to you and hold up their book and says, "Yeah, but you don't have an objective moral standard." And that's true. We have to change these standards as necessary to make a better society.
Sure.
Once you settle down into an Iron Age mentality and say, this is what it's going to be and there's no changing that, then you basically outlawed general human behavior and put up barriers to the progressing of the species and the society.
Sure. If I can make a comment, though. Mm-hmm. So I think the basis of why we have a morality could be subjective, as in whether you value, like, welfare, you know, taking care of people, reducing harm, etc. That's all subjective based on wherever you go. But once you have a set of principles that you find valuable for a particular society, you can generate objective rules that support those very specific lists of subjective principles. So in that sense, objective, yeah, you can definitely establish an objective morality, but it'll be based on subjective principles based on, you know, welfare, health.
So our objective morality is the law of the state. I mean, you can go downtown and pull the law books off the shelf and look at them. Those are our current objective morality, defined to the smallest minutia of detail. But do we need that kind of detail? I guess.
Yeah, I kind of...
Like, do we really need a law against somebody spitting on the street?
Sure. I think I would separate... I don't know if there's a word for it, but I would separate legalities from, like, moralities. Whereas legal is just, like, we came as a group to decide the speed limit, and there's nothing moral about 55 versus 45.
It's just those same laws cover things like stealing,
sure,
murder.
It's
the same set.
I'm not saying there's no overlap whatsoever, but I wouldn't say, like, I can take any book that the law and pull out morals from it. Like, some of them are just, like, strictly procedural stuff.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that if you're saying we don't have a set of moral objectives or objective morals, then you can at least point to the law books and say ours are in there. There are a lot of other ones that are in there that don't affect morals.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, like you could even say that a percentage rate of loan would be moral. Usury would not be considered a moral thing.
Yeah. It also begs the question of, is there even an objective morality that we're supposed to be targeting in the first place?
Well, I think people are looking for a universal morality.
Ooh, universal morality.
I think they're wanting something that's simple and black and white, and they can just reach out and touch it. It's not overcomplicated.
And have a personal relationship with.
Absolutely. It's very much the concept of, that's almost what's creating that God figure, I think, in our minds, is that sense of relationship to these objective morals that are very universal.
It gets the dopamine flowing.
Absolutely. If I say, you know, thou shalt not kill, not many people are going to argue with that until we get into the justice system and we say, okay,
maybe
we should. Death penalty.
Maybe we should.
Are there objective reasons we should do this?
Or thou shalt not show an ankle. Sure. In public.
Sure. What? Is that a commandment for real?
Well, no.
Is that like number 247 or something?
We're talking about objective morals.
Right.
We have a set of objective morals codified into our laws.
Sure.
Islam
yes.
has a set of objective morals codified into their holy book and their other books that came later.
Well, secularism,
they're not compatible in a modern society. I mean,
that's
why we're having the terrorism that we're having today.
Mm.
The authoritarianism and the lack of
discretion in reading the text, or the fundamentalism of reading the text as
whole. Yeah. So Islam actually is practiced in a modern society right now. Like, well, I mean, you want to go to like. You can go to first world countries. Well, I don't know if they're first world or not, but you can go to Malaysia, you can go to Pakistan, you can go to certain sects or certain areas of India, all of them which are fairly industrialized, all of which are...
But those are different societies. What I'm saying is if you cut... the Middle Eastern flavor of Islam has codified their objective morals differently than we have and the people in the Southeastern Asia.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Different areas have codified different morals, and that's where the problem comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are more individuals who are on board with the fundamentalist view than can be borne out in any poll or any discussion. I think by the way it's lived out. And you're absolutely right. There are sects like there are in any group of religious believers that are more liberal and further away from the fundamentalist practice of a doctrine.
But then you would also have like more liberal and further away.
Well, yeah, you know, when I speak of liberal and conservative from that standpoint means I'm sticking true to the text. I'm going to abide by it to the letter more.
Yeah.
The further we get away from that, I consider that a more liberal view of that document or that holy text.
Okay,
so that's kind of where I'm getting at with that conservative and liberal view.
Sure,
You know,
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I guess so.
And to get back to that authoritarian point on the that you bring up, I think it's interesting to note that even though we have that authoritarian strong arm in place, we still find so many denominations cropping out throughout history, whether it be Christianity or Islam.
And you don't actually have to have religion for authoritarianism.
No.
But it seems to be...
Or the other way around, right?
It seems to be endemic in religion, except for the philosophical religions
of
Buddhism, Taoism, and Shintoism, that type of thing.
So we're looking at this window. We saw a bunch of stuff. We had a really nice conversation. Hold on, there's a bird outside. Can I? How does this machine work? Is there any sound effects coming out of this thing? Oh, there we go. Okay, that's how the windshield wipers work. All right, so world without religion... we can definitely see some things that we're not worried about anymore. We don't have to worry about incredibly hardcore authoritarian figureheads.
Thank God. I mean...
All right. What if we were looking at things that we miss? Is this world any less now that we don't have these religions? Is there anything that we're missing?
Well, like, I think there's a sense of community that binds you together in certain religious views. I know as a former Christian, there are parts of the experience that I miss, even though I know that they're complete bunk. Now I kind of miss those experiences, even though I can't quantify what they were outside of emotional.
Right. Are you talking about like jamming to Christian rock stations?
You don't have to have religion for that. I mean, look at Sunday Assembly. They do the very same thing without the God, without the superstitious beliefs. If the listener would like to know more about it, do a Google on Sunday Assembly. It started in England a couple of years ago and has pretty much spread across the world. One right here in Knoxville.
So you can still enjoy...
Wait a minute. We adopted something British?
Yeah.
We did.
Oh, wow.
I thought about that as long as it's not Canadian. Oh, shots fired. All right. So one of the things I miss... Not miss. I still enjoy it. It's not a dirty passion of mine, but Christian rock music. Just the hardcore, very, very major chords, the repetition... Easy vamping.
We need to talk. I can introduce you to some great music.
Yeah, I mean, I miss that. I wish there could be bands, or at least music,
that played those chords, had those beats.
Or any kind of music in general that's like atheism related. Do we have anything like that?
Yes, I have maybe 50 songs here on my list. Should we hear one now?
Yeah, I would love to hear some music. What?
Okay. You like Big Butter Jesus?
Yeah, let's... Big Butter Jesus. That one again, yes. Come on.
Or I've got one called What If No One's Watching?
Yeah, let's do that.
By Anne DeFrank.
Let's do it.
Annie DeFranco. Let me move Big Butter Jesus down. And here we go. For everything I know,
And you don't have to agree with me, but once you get me going, you let me go. I mean, we have to be able to criticize what we love, say what we have to say. You're not trying to make something better, but as far as I can tell, you are just in the way. I mean, what if no one's watching? What if when we're dead, we are just dead? I mean, what if it's just us down here? What if God is just an idea someone put in your head? I mean, what if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? Sunset and the camera would pan away, but the sky is just a little sister tagging along behind the buildings trying to imitate their brain. What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching?
And that was Annie DeFranco with What If No One's Watching. This is going to take a second to talk about the atheist and rationalist groups that are here in Knoxville. First of all, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. They get together every Tuesday at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. That's happy hour, beer, pizza, and very unofficial, very informal.
Bring your tux.
Don't bring the tux. But do expect to see a lot of your atheist friends there, because there's usually between 25 and 35 of us there at the longest table in the main bar area. That's where you guys came down and saw us for the first time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we came the same night, met the same night.
Wonderful time.
Have hung out a couple times since then. It's been a great opportunity.
Every Tuesday. Also, there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee, which is actually an older group than ours, and we've been around 14 years. Rationalists started in 95, so it's about 20 years. They meet the first and third.
Don't feel bad.
Meet the first and third Sundays at Pellissippi campus over there off of Pellissippi Parkway and Harper Valley Road or whatever it is. That's not the right road. What is it? Harden Valley Road.
95 is 20 years
close.
Ago.
That's
is it?
Close.
Is 95 20 years ago? Just
yes,
help me out.
It's 21 years ago.
That's even worse.
Yes, yes. So if
it's
you
as
look
old
up,
as Pokemon.
If you go to rationalist.org, you can read about all the details about getting together with the Rationalists of East Tennessee. And if you go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org, you can find out about the Knoxville Atheist Society. Where we're going to get back to
morals. Shout-outs to, though, that meetup group that led us to the Barley's Tap Room. And there's also an atheist game nights that are normally scheduled.
On Thursdays.
Thursdays or the Wednesdays, yeah. Mm-hmm. That same week, bring in any kind of board games you want and have a fun time. It's really great.
You'll read more about those on our...
Meetup.com,
or we have a Facebook page, a public Facebook
That's
page.
That's true, too.
Called the Knoxville... Atheist Society of Knoxville. Excuse me. Remember, this is a call-in show, and we do have an open line, 333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. Oh, yeah, the TV show. We didn't mention that.
Yeah, what about that TV show?
It comes on
Tuesdays. It's easy to forget that thing.
It is. As a matter of fact, it goes on right at the same time that the Atheist Meetup goes on.
Oh, okay.
They broadcast from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock every Tuesday on Comcast Channel 12.
Nice.
Which is the community access TV channel. It's called CTV?
Doubt if I've
community television.
I actually have some bad news. I don't have a TV. I just got sent to an island. All I have is an internet connection.
And you can watch it on the internet.
What? That's insane.
It is. CTVKnox.org, and you can watch that streaming live every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. And then after the show, come down to Barley's, and we'll be happy to talk to you there.
Sounds great.
And our group will get together. Okay, back to worlds without religion.
Actually, I'm getting tired of this planet. How do you guys feel?
I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah. What? You're doing a great job. What are you talking about?
I'm here.
Everyone needs a co-pilot. Okay, and I need someone to help me push all these buttons. Okay. How about instead of a world... Okay. A world without religion is already, I think, the place that I want to talk about a little bit more.
Okay.
we talk more of just like how the society may have gotten here. There's some pretty nice futuristic rainbows. I see like some mechanic giraffes. I think Dr. Five's pretty happy to see
those. More halogen bulbs.
Yeah. No more halogen bulbs. Yeah, I don't know about these like weird glow-in-the-dark crystal things. I really wish incandescent lamps came back in style. But let's talk about the people. I tried talking to one of them.
Sure.
I was not happy with the conversation I had. And I think
really?
Every single person that I'm talking
who
to.
Who are you talking to?
Well, I got off
the
ship. Yeah, no. I got off the ship. Actually, can you roll down the window a little bit?
Sure.
So I'm gonna show you how this works. Hey, mister!
Yeah, there's no God, so you're dumb if you think there is one.
Yeah, that's all I'm hearing every single time I talk to someone. You can roll it back up again. See that? The whole population is insufferable.
Oh, well, the thing about it is, if there were no belief in God, then there would be no discussion about God. The guy would not bring it up. We'd talk to you.
You can't just ignore that conversation that already happened.
It was...
Like, there are already people out there...
Did we erase history?
Metaphorically.
Yeah, I think that we're off into Santa Claus land. It just...
So there are people...
If they did not have religious beliefs, someone would say, the first time they ever talked to you, they would say... we don't believe in God.
So, maybe you don't see this book.
Why would they even bother? There's no reason for the word atheism.
It's a non sequitur at this point.
Yeah. Sure, in some places, but we have to admit that the propagation of religions could largely be due from just human nature. And because of that, could have just been an exercise of ration against human nature, where people would propose a God, and they would say, oh, I don't have enough rational belief to believe that, therefore I don't believe in the God, and everyone else came to that same conclusion, but they would have heard of the God concept.
If that's the case, if religion is a direct response to a human need, then we would not ever find ourselves in a world without religion, because eventually it would find its way back into the consciousness of the collective.
Yeah, absolutely. You would always have the question available. And like you said, with a little bit of an arsenic and a big pot of water, I think a little bit of it is good, only in the sense that it exposes you to what you should be looking out for. And I think... that's always healthy. There's a healthy limit, and there's a dangerous limit to religion.
Well, I think the dangerous side of homeopathy is calling it science. I think that when you consider what we understand about science, when you dilute something that heavily, and we know that it decreases its potency,
mm-hmm.
if you sell it as a treatment, knowing sure. that it's not doing anything, that you've essentially eliminated the original droplet of arsenic in that much water. It's essentially non-existent in that water now.
Yeah.
Continuing to call that science and the treatment for health issues raises all kinds of questions.
And I'm going to tackle you on this dilution theory thing that you keep bringing up.
I'm down.
I'm going to talk about that one guy who I'm still burned about. Well, how should these people talk to each other, especially the people who may have beliefs or may just be believing slightly different kind of atheism?
So belief has come back, for example,
there are different levels of atheism. There are people who are, of course, it all falls underneath one umbrella, but there are people who would take a more confident or at least a more aggressive position on the God proposal than others. There are some who would take the complete, I am confident there is no God and I can prove that. And there are people who say, my position is, I just don't know and I don't have enough information.
That are in the closet, they don't discuss it at all.
Sure,
I met a couple of people from, Minnesota, I think it was this weekend, who still go to church. But they both of them told me that they did not believe in God. It's just the pressure of the society that they live in and their business. They have a business. And if they came out in that very religious setting, they would lose their customers, they would lose their friends.
Sure. I'd also say you feel that pressure both ways, not only just from the church, but maybe from more evangelicalistic, if you will, atheists who are like, we need you to come out. We need you to start talking. We need you on our radio shows. We need you on YouTube. We need you on this other thing. So I'm just... is there some considerations that should be made for at least these people outside, at least for the people that we know back in our own home world, how you should interact if you have come to the conclusion...
I have a general rule of thumb myself about interaction with religious people.
Or non-religious people.
Either way. If they don't bring it up, I don't bring it up.
If you don't bring it up, you don't bring it up.
If they bring it up, then they have given me their opinion. And it is my right to give them my opinion in that situation. But what gets me is that people will do these hit and run type of things.
Sure.
Like I'll get up from lunch, I'll go to the cash register, and I'll pay. And as I turn my back, they'll say, "Have a blessed day." Now, they just brought their religion into
it. They're also just trying to be nice to you at the same time.
And that's cultural in some senses,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
I'm kind of like, you know, I moved from Metro Atlanta, and my first experience with a Tennessean was, instead of saying y'all, I heard yuns.
Yuns?
Oh, yeah, yuns.
That's new.
Yeah, but that doesn't bring in a religion.
Well, how about this?
It's a cultural thing, and I think in some aspects, culture has absorbed portions of religiosity and turned it into a cultural thing. Kind of like when you sneeze, anybody, even some atheists that I know, still say bless you.
I'm one of them. I'm still a fan of the bless you phrase, or even God bless you phrase, only in the sense that I know I'm in a place where it's polite to respond in a certain way.
Now, where,
and I'm not having a religious discussion with someone.
Where did bless you come from?
It came from my, you know, ultimately it came from my cultural background, where I was grown, who raised me, and stuff like that. But I do it as a gesture of politeness rather than a testament of religiosity. And if they get offended, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm an atheist too. It's not a big deal. I just do it because I saw you sneeze and I hope you feel well.
Originally that came from victims of the plague.
Oh.
When the plague was at its worst, sneezing was one of the symptoms that was known. And my understanding of it, and this may be completely hearsay,
1300s?
Bless you.
Oh, okay.
Bless you. You're going to die.
Oh, really?
Bless you.
Whoa. That's dark.
That's heavy.
You got to bring it back up again.
I'm sorry.
I'm tired of you guys bringing
it
down.
I have this whole
No, I'm not going to let this guy bring it down like that. You can't just drop that and run.
A lot of times, what I heard was that they would say, bless you, because they did not know where illness came from, and they figured it came from the Satan or the devil.
Ah. Yeah.
And that if you had a demon in you that someone and you were sneezing or having, they would say, bless
it's
you.
It's a pocket
to
exorcism to make you feel better, to get rid of the demons who are currently plaguing you.
Now, that's interesting.
Now, it's much less dark.
Yes.
We're back up. I'm feeling happy again. Thank you, Dr.
You're going to die.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, so we have one rule of I'm willing to be polite to someone if I don't know their particularly religious background by saying what I believe to be a fairly innocuous thing, such as bless you, just out of sake of politeness. I don't find that an expression
of
religion.
Them on it. I just hate it when they do that to me. You know, they'll bring their religion into the conversation where it wasn't there before.
I didn't even mention which God. I could literally be talking about a God that's a record player in my basement.
So for him, it was completely innocent.
God bless you, my record player, bless you.
For him, it was completely innocent.
Yeah.
For him,
yeah.
It was, oh, bless you.
Now, if he said, like...
Now, the one that does get me, I will say, is God bless you, like, on your way out of a store.
Right.
That one still
kind of touches me. Well, that's the same thing.
I don't mind that. I think that's just good wishes. You know, they used to do that for boats. They used to say, God bless this boat, and they crash a little, like, alcohol thing against the side of its body.
So you think, and God we trust on our money is just good wishes?
Well, I was talking about money. I'm saying if I crack a champagne bottle on a boat, I'm just going through motions. I don't think the champagne bottle does anything. I don't think the incantation does anything. They still do it with their battleships. They do it with every ship we make in the U.S. Navy.
They did that with the Titanic.
And you're a Navy guy. You know what I'm talking about. So, for the most part, I'm fine with it. If I'm on a boat, it doesn't bother me. What's going to save me is the metal engineering that put everyone together, and I think everyone knows that. And this is just a traditional thing that we're just doing because we don't really have a heritage in America.
Sure.
We kind of took over here, and we've only been around for about 200 some 60 years. We're trying to inject an idea that we've been here a lot longer, and invoking God into this like immaterial beyond space and time makes us feel more important. And I get that. I don't think it's so much, and I can break it down to that, so I won't necessarily get personally offended if someone says, hey, God bless you. We always say that in this country.
It seems to me like some of that is cultural absorption of things. It's commonly said that America is a Christian nation. Now, we as atheists understand the document the way it was intended from a more non-theistic standpoint. It was merely acknowledging the fact that we are a creation, not necessarily that there was a creator. We are an extension of natural processes via evolution.
I don't think there's any document that says we're a Christian nation.
No, but there's a common perception in America by the evangelical right that this is a Christian nation.
And they promulgate that every chance they get.
And I think that part of that is true in this sense. Now, hear me out. Don't jump on me just yet.
Okay.
I think
I'm pushing down my ejector seat on my butt and I'm flipping it back down.
I think some of the cultural aspects of Christianity have been absorbed into the greater culture in such a way, like bless you is used as a common way of when someone sneezes. Instead of saying Gesundheit here in America, it's said bless you. I think at some point the religious connotation that's there is kind of abstracted out of it, and it's been placed into a more cultural mindset than it is its original religious intent.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
So maybe bless you is the new American Gesundheit.
You mean have a blessed day? Because I wasn't taking exception to a bless you. You know, if I sneeze and someone says, sure, bless you, I let it go. There's no problem. I don't even think about it. But when I'm actually having an interaction with someone and I say thank you and they say have a blessed day, where they used to say have a nice day.
Sure.
And it's a conscious change.
Sure.
You know, they have then injected their religion into our conversation.
Sure. Well, or just to counter that, I would like to have a blessed day.
Yeah.
I'm an atheist.
Who wouldn't?
I wouldn't mind Wombat blessing me today.
I hope you have a blessed day, dude.
Thank you. I hope you have a blessed day. I might bless you.
So, I'm now facing a mutiny, folks.
Now, if I said, I hope Jesus Christ, who came down and saved us from our sins, and who is the Holy Son of XYZ, who from verse XXX,
there's the door,
came and gave you a blessed day.
So
yeah,
it's a matter
you are
of degree.
Clearly objecting.
It's just a matter of degree.
Yeah,
then.
But if I'm just saying, hey, have a nice time, but I just want a like cultural way of saying that. Hey, have a nice time, secular version.
Yep.
Have a secular nice day, sir.
There you go. Well, say that's the thing about it. That would be the secular version of it. And
no,
I don't say
it?
That. I don't bring that into the conversation.
So have a great day. Have a nice day. Don't do the blessed.
Yeah,
so.
We have to come to a recognition that even secular society is based on a history of religious backgrounds. And, we have a phone call. I would push.
Yes, but do you have a phone call? Go ahead.
Hey, Rick?
Yes.
Hey, this is Brandon. I just wanted to say I agree with you on the blessed as being a passive aggressive act.
Passive aggressive act. Brandon,
let
who
him
are
talk.
You?
Wombat, let him talk. Go ahead. Wombat talked over you. Can you say the last part of it again?
Sorry about that.
Yeah. How did they? I've had people with me who were Christians who said, "Ooh, that person just kind of caught you over the head with Jesus."
Brandon, could you role play with me for a second? So like I'm walking out of a store right now. I want you to say, "Have a blessed day" in a passive aggressive tone. Could you do that for me? I'm walking out. Go for it. That didn't make me feel bad.
I wasn't offended.
No, I wasn't offended either.
Have a blessed day. I don't want to offend you.
Looking at you and the other cues that they're giving you on it.
All right. Mm-hmm. I don't want to offend your position at all. However, isn't it possible that personal experience may have informed that position and not the true intent of the person saying it?
Oh, he's going dark again.
Well, go ahead, Brandon. I'll talk to you.
What happened when people were with me and they kind of turned to me and said, ooh, you know, that person was being very passive aggressive in the way that they said that to you. And these were Christians who were saying that.
Well, so maybe I can put some context in this.
I think it is used that way sometimes.
Were you dressed or were you wearing anything in a way that would have made it obviously clear that you weren't Christian or like weren't?
Maybe more in retail sales than anywhere else.
Were you in your Sikh dress?
Yes, head wrap.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I would say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. I want to know how you can talk to someone who has different beliefs than you when you both either don't believe in God or when you don't believe in God and you're talking to someone who does believe in God. There has to be a really good way that you can bridge that gap. Being a donkey butt doesn't help, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how do you even approach that topic when it is brought up? Say, for example, hey, Jesus Christ is with you on your road trip back home, and I hope you have a good time.
I'm sorry, I'm not a believer.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. That's cool.
Okay, thanks.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I think I can empathize with our caller.
I still hope you get home safely.
Thank you.
Hey.
I think I can empathize with our caller. I think when there's a perception of a religious connotation with how we dress, my wife still dresses like a fundamentalist Pentecostal. Now, she wears makeup and she wears jewelry now, things that we didn't do then, but she still wears a long dress because that's a preference for her. Now, if someone were to directly go to her and say, God bless you, I just want to let you know I'm praying for you.
Sure.
I would take offense to that because they're making an assumption about the way she's dressed as being indicative of her belief system. So I can sympathize with the caller in that regard, that if someone's making a prejudgment based off of a cultural a cultural association and making an instant religious association.
Well, there's also another dimension to that when they say, I'll pray for you. It implies that you're broken and need fixing.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's Hitchens' argument. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
I come from a culturally diverse research group. I've been since maybe the last 10 years or so. We have people in our group who have Muslim background. I have the opportunity to talk with them a lot. One of the things they'll say is, inshallah, which is essentially like God's will or God willing. But I'll say something in the sense of, man, I really hope this experiment goes well. And they'll say, don't worry, Tyrone, it's going to work out well. Inshallah, we're like, God willing, it's going to be right. Or, which is just more on their part, just like a good luck saying, like, you
well,
know,
God willing is an American saying, too.
Yeah.
Or an English saying. I mean, and we culturally tack it on the end of some projections.
So, in a sense, like, I can parse the cultural relevance of what they're saying to an idea that they're just trying to give me that's just colored or textured with their personal upbringing. And I actually kind of appreciate that because they're actually putting their own little flavor and making a personalized little note saying, hey, you know, have a good time. If I go to Japan, I forgot the last time I was there, but they'll say like, irashemase, or like when you walk in, they'll say, itadakimasu when they're about to eat food. I humbly accept this food. It's from their Shinto background. Their culture is part of their religion, or their religion is part of their culture. And even if they're not ardent believers, they can still try to get points across in casual settings where they're not trying to necessarily inject, but they're just trying to express goodwill. And that's what's more important for me. Maybe as atheists talking to each other as atheists or atheists talking to religious people, we should be more focused not so much on just like the words that are being said to us or what we say to other people, but the context and the package that we're sending to them. Because if we can just have goodwill being sent out, maybe that'll be better than just saying, hey, you're wrong.
Sure.
And I know I'm right. Blah,
sure.
Blah, blah.
I think too, in some situations though, when there are religious connotations addressed openly, and it's done in the right way, it opens up an opportunity for straight epistemology to take place.
Straight epistemology.
Well, for you to be able to approach a person and begin a conversation about their beliefs. Why, that's interesting. God bless you. Could I ask you why you believe God would want to bless me?
Using the Socratic method.
Absolutely. And that's a very effective tool in engaging with people of religious backgrounds. It's a very gentle approach to very sensitive topics for some people, and it kind of disarms them and allows us to go into conversation that maybe we could convert some folks into a rational way of thinking.
Hmm.
Oh, where's the crickets?
We need the crickets.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to transition I sneezed and someone said bless you to a, let's have a nice little talk about rationalism, shall we? Like, I just want to just be like, oh, I sneezed, you're right, you got me, I'm out. I think there's a time and place for it. Like, maybe you
should pick your battles.
But perhaps you can make like a little bank of, I got a lot of God bless yous today. Maybe want to have you like on a one-on-one session. Maybe we're playing video games. I can be like, hey man, I know that you keep saying God bless you for all these things, but I got this background. Is that something you want to talk about? And if no, it's like, cool, let's just keep playing Mortal Kombat.
Sure.
I will knock your head off in a bloody oblivion.
Sure.
It's totally fine.
Sure.
What do we got? Are we good to go?
Well, do we want to get back to the moral objectives, moral originals?
Sure.
Origins?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, how about the belief in God origins? Has anybody talked to you about the agency argument for gods, per se?
So,
I mean, back in our infancy, the infancy of the human race, back when we were trying to make our way in a world we did not understand.
Sure. We're still doing that now.
Yeah, but then it was much more primitive in that we didn't have our modern understanding of the sciences and things like that. But back then, if we heard a rustle in the bushes, we could, one, think it's the wind, or two, think that there's a dangerous animal.
Sure. Yeah.
Coming after us.
Yeah.
Now, the people who thought it was a dangerous animal and ran away, or took shelter, or ran up a tree, had much more of a better chance to survive, pass on their genes. The genes that seeks agency. In other words, there's an agent, an intelligence, in the bushes, coming after me. Now, those people, as they ran away, they survived to father more children, have more progeny. The people who thought, I just went, they sometimes got eaten, and they didn't have that chance.
Yeah.
So that's how evolution works. You have more children who carry on your genes, and it promulgates on down through the species. So we get to a point in our in our history where we don't understand where lightning comes from. Well, we project agency into the clouds and say, there's a God up there throwing bolts of lightning.
Yeah.
You know, or there's a God on the mountain that's causing this avalanche.
Yeah.
Or caused that volcano to blow up.
Just today I was asked, well, where do clouds come from? I was having a religious talk. It's like, okay, well, yeah, if you don't believe in God, then where do clouds come from? I've had that conversation before.
That's the tree argument.
Well, it's an argument.
Where do trees come from?
Yeah, setting up for that. Well, I actually know where vapor pressure and water, moisture, do that.
Moisture in the air. Yeah. Right. Mixing the cool.
Long story short.
But at the same time, we as a species have evolved to seek agency in places where it wasn't.
I see what you're saying.
That's where the first gods came from.
Yeah. So we have a brain that's very, very weird, and it's also kind of dumb, and we are almost in a weird sense getting smarter than our brains are, if you allow me to say that. And I say that only in the sense that we are becoming aware of things that we normally never were aware of. And what we're realizing is our brain likes to make patterns, and it likes to make easy patterns that benefit us. But the pattern-making machinery that we have is based on those primitive technologies where it's like, oh, there's a monster, you're not dead. Oh, and there's something, eat it.
And evolution didn't start with apes. It didn't start with monkeys.
Right.
It went all the way back to the first.
We're talking about 3.5 billion years of hardcore.
Your brain isn't totally a human brain. It builds on earlier brains that have evolved all the way from like fish through reptiles.
Your brain isn't a human brain.
The base of your brain is basically a reptile.
That's heavy.
I don't know if I agree with that.
I would agree that every human brain is a human brain.
I invite your skepticism.
Okay.
Look it up.
I'm not doubting that there are parts that we share with other animals, but the unique feature of my brain is that it
is the big part of your brain, the big crinkly part that sits on top of all the others, that's your human brain.
Okay.
An ape brain.
Okay.
But when you start looking down into the brain stem and the parts of the brain that sit on top, right on top of the brain stem,
the
old brains,
those are
reptile brains. It's earlier.
Or when he says reptile listeners, he's not literally meaning like a lizard. He's just talking about like from the period of reptiles, that part of the brain has remained unchanged largely.
Thank you, Dr. Wombat.
Yes. That is true.
Thank you. I'm just putting some citations here. That's it. All right.
Doubt me and look it up.
He got me on glycine clouds a while back ago, so I have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I want to discuss. Can we go back to our real world? This place is getting a little too cold. All right, very nice. All right, open up the doors, guys. Get out. Open up the doors, guys.
Okay.
I appreciate that. All right. So you brought up something as we were walking through this coffee machine. Our coffee machine's broken, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Very nice. We got it working. And there's spit all over it. Very nice. Okay. Dilution theory.
Yes.
The concept of this, and I'm just going to summarize it again for you. Let me know if I'm saying this right.
By all means.
Basically, what you have is a very large religion that bifurcates, or that's too complicated a word, that splits into different sects.
Yes.
And because they split into sects, the original message is kind of lost in time as more sects are being made.
Or diluted.
And or diluted. And every sect splits into more sects, and that sect is basically like one of those fractoral images that just keeps
They can pick a particular primordial idea and really run with it, handling snakes and
that type of thing
and build their whole church on that. So one tiny little aspect of the old religion.
So I'm getting into that.
It was just, in my opinion, still a dilution.
It's still a dilution of the original.
Picking one thing and emphasizing it is still a dilution of the core, in my theory.
Right. Sir. And I would say, instead of a dilution, if I can still keep a water analogy going, I would say it's more of a ripple.
Okay.
And the ripple spreads out. I'm not a really expert on ripple physics, but essentially let's pretend it can maintain the same amplitude or split. It hits some rocks and that makes more ripples and so on. You end up with more distortion as a result of even though we don't have that same core idea anymore, we have a hell of a lot more problem, if it's a problem. We have a lot more disturbances as a result of it. And that just...
Societal disturbances?
Sure. As more sex essentially fit into the proper niche of each particular group, and then as that group changes, it makes more religions to fit each of those particular niches. You're not getting rid of the problem. You're not diluting the problem. You're actually multiplying it.
I can agree with that, because I think in the end, over time, both dilution and a wave dissipate.
Yeah, I didn't want to use the ripple for that.
I understand. I wanted to use the water analogy. Even as complex as a wave can become, eventually, over enough time, that wave dissipates and just becomes part of its environment.
But that wave disappears. But that wave originated from like a core idea, and I will totally agree with you that that core idea disappears.
Sure.
But in the wake of that disappearing idea are a whole bunch of new ideas that come about from that wave. And each of those will take time to disappear, but they're multiplying faster than they're disappearing.
I think without that core, this is just an opinion of my theory. This is informed by my experiences.
Sure.
That the further from the core belief system that you go, the less effective and the less hold and the less time of existence it'll last. No one really follows Christianity the way it was in the first century.
Sure.
No one really follows Judaism the way it was in the Bronze in eras before that.
Sure.
This is, in my opinion, a result of time. I think if you stretch the religions out over time, they fracture, they splinter, and eventually they become inconsequential.
Because you don't see anyone fighting for Thor or Athena at this point.
Exactly.
Time, right?
Well, and I think the major religions will eventually face that same fate.
Well, ripples don't generally point to all the other ripples and say that the other ripples are wrong. but some ripples will coincide with other ripples and join together and become bigger waves. We've seen that happen to some churches have joined other churches, and it's like the Southern Baptist Convention, the organization. They took a whole bunch of separate Baptist churches and joined together to become the Baptist Southern Baptist Association.
Or the Methodists and the Pentecostals.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they can join together and become a lot more effective from their particular standpoint.
When you look at Pentecostalism today, it's one of the fastest growing Christian sects in the world. My understanding is that's still the statistic today, is that it's still one of the fastest growing denominations of Christianity in the world.
How is Catholicism doing, by the way?
My understanding is it's growing again, but not nearly at the rate that it would like to.
Okay,
but I don't follow Catholicism all that much, so that may be a stretch.
There used to be a point where it's like Catholicism or nothing. Like, we own the whole world.
Sure.
And now it's like so many other options that I imagine they're feeling some pressure.
Well, there are almost equally number of, within a fraction of probably 4 or 5 points per million, I believe that Catholicism and Islam run about the same number of adherents in the world.
Really? Are you serious?
Very close.
That's interesting.
It's also important to say, how are they growing? Are they growing in numbers or are they growing in percentage? I mean, you can be getting bigger in numbers but not growing as a percentage because others, you know, because they're decreasing as percentage. So do you have any numbers on that?
I don't have any numbers in front of me. I sure don't.
Okay.
Next week.
Well, maybe we can talk about that later. We're down to the last minute or two. Do you have any closing statements?
So we had a really fun time, I think. We had a good,
absolutely
positive time and still learned some stuff about religion.
Yeah.
I think everything's good.
The wombat is happy.
I'm happy.
Yeah, right, right.
Dr. Wombat.
That's right.
Boy Scout, do you have any closing words?
No, I think that it's been a great conversation. I look forward to the next one.
Okay.
Have a blessed day.
Oh, and follow my... have a blessed day. No.
Follow
my YouTube channel.
Have a secular day. What does that mean?
If you're listening and you enjoy what you've heard, you can continue to hear more of the types of criticisms and arguments that we've had today on the Bearded Boy Scout on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
So
nice.
Check us out.
Nice.
Yeah, and you can also visit my blog, digitalfreethought.com.
I have no such plugs.
And
just have a nice day, guys.
50 or 60 articles on there that are pretty atheist in their orientation.
We should make Have a Blessed Day our closing catchphrase.
Yeah.
I just think that's a nice, nuanced bit of levity.
To
leave things in an upbeat,
yeah,
here's Big Butter Jesus.
In southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, I beheld a vision. Next to the expressway was a 60-foot Jesus with his hands in the air. Looked like he's carved out of butter, just like at the State Fair. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, imperial Jesus. Can't believe it's not Jesus. Holy, oh Lord. Well, you see him from the chest up, like he's about to do a backflip, like he scored a touchdown, or maybe melting or about to drown. Well, I've been to the State Fair, seen a cow made out of corn cobs, Garth Brooks out of string cheese, and the Virgin out of olives.